Good morning. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Meredith Johnson. I'm a fifth grader at Albert Cassens Elementary School in Glen Carbon. I've been a member here with my family at First Unitarian Church for 3 years. In the pulpit this morning, we have Reverend Terry Davis, Minister of Pastoral Care from Elliott Unitarian Chapel. You are invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship conversation and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. If you are a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you'll do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know all about the programs and activities going on here at the church. If you would like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you are certainly welcome to take home with you. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know. I draw your attention to the announcements in your order of service. We hope you'll keep these things in mind as you plan your upcoming week.
I am Eric Johnson. I have an announcement. You may have noticed, for those of you who weren't here last week, you may notice today you have a sticky in your order of service. This is a very sacred and holy sticky. Okay? And for those of you who weren't here last week, we are doing sticky notes in conjunction with our stewardship campaign. Now, one of our congregants a couple weeks ago went to a church in, I believe, Minneapolis, and they did this for their stewardship campaign. Here's the idea. You may have seen these all over the place. There's one on the piano. There's one on the windows. Bunch on the pulpit here. This week, we're doing the Inspiring the Present, the middle statement there. Okay? So, on the top it says, I give because. All right? And this is both financial and gifts of yourself, gifts of your talent. Okay? I give because. And then put down on your little sticky why you give and put it in that sacred place that represents. So, this one says, I give because of the energetic, kind, creative, free-thinking, artistic, mindful people that I find here who give me energy. Bam! Right here. Okay, so, put that down. Think about the present. Last time we did the past. This time we're going to think about the present. So, what is presently powerful for you? And where is it presently powerful for you? And stick that sticky there. And it's a lot of fun after church or before church to go around and read the stickies and to see what other people find meaningful all over this wonderful, special place that Stephen says.
I'm Mary Johnson. No relation. I am the coordinator of the Capital Campaign, and our Capital Campaign has a goal of $400,000 that we want to do things around the church to improve its attractiveness and its accessibility and other things that are needed. Our goal is $400,000. The capital campaign officially kicked off last week in tandem with the annual campaign, but we had a few early givers, and as of yesterday, we have $208,230 pledged. So we're over halfway. For every pledge that is made, a little chalice is filled out there. So you can kind of see the range of the pledges that have been made, from $50,000 to $1,000 and less. Every week I'll be adding more little colors into these circles, and we'll watch how the number of pledges and the amount of pledges grow. Thank you.
I'm Sarah Johnson, and I'm president of the Board of Trustees. I'm also co-facilitator of the Camping Ministries, which is a building community through camping organization we have here at church. We have two fantastic camping opportunities coming up. The first one is the weekend of April 20th at Bergfried, which is a Unitarian campground that Elliott Chapel owns, and they're graciously agreeing to allow us to come on out and share the love on their space. This is a radical self-reliant trip. You'll need to bring all the stuff you'll need to survive in the 600 acres out there for 2 days. It's a free event. You just have to come on out. It's in Herman, Missouri. There's more information out here in the Kate Worker Room, or you can speak with me. I don't see the Crone Willises here, but I'm happy to answer your questions. Also, our congregation has rented the group camp at Pere Marquette. We are Camp Piasaw this year, June 1st through the 4th. It is an all-inclusive camping event. All you have to do is show up with a fan, some bug spray, and some blankets. We will provide everything else for you. 3 great meals a day, 2 snacks, a pool, bingo, dances, all kinds of fun stuff. We're encouraging everybody to come out for the day, for the night. It's $125 to $200 per family, sliding scale. More if you can, less if you can't. We want everybody to come. We have scholarships available. It's going to be a great time. Come and talk to us. There's a lot of information out here. You can get on our mailing list, and I'll give you more information.
Hi, I'm Kevin McCarthy. I'm pretending to be Diane Thompson today. In May, we are going to be doing a blitz build in East St. Louis as part of the social justice program. There is a slight change. We had publicized this for being on the 21st of May. There was a scheduling conflict, and they cannot use us until the 22nd of May. So if that changes anybody's ability to participate, please let Diane know. Also, there's an opportunity for a second day on the 24th.
Hi, I'm Robin. 3 quick things. First, I want to say thank you to Trish for a great fourth Saturday lunch yesterday. And on that note, I'm already geared up to host April's, and the sign-up sheets are in there already. I thought I got everything. I think we should be doing breakfast for lunch. If there's anything you think I've missed, just add it on the list. I was doing it with my intravenous caffeine this morning, so one never knows what that'll look like. The third thing that I wanted to say is I will not be able to go to the April camping trip, but I have lots of camping gear, so if there's a family out there, it's like, oh, I'd like to do that, but I don't have the stuff, come see me, I got plenty. So, no problem. Have a good one.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any joys, milestones, or concern you may bring with you to the church this morning.
Morning. Be welcome in this special place. I want to share with you a perfect day, and it started yesterday, right here. In the morning, I saw Marty Johnson and Jerry Johnson and Michelle Bryant Barbeau, they sat down with Linda, our new bookkeeper and CPA. It was very exciting to hear that that was all coming together on your behalf. At 10 o'clock, 30 different youth from all over the area came and visited with us all day long for the MiniCon Youth Conference, the first one ever that we have sponsored. At 10:30, and somebody's already mentioned the work that Trish did, we had a party for 65 different people, our guests here, and they went away fortified in body and spirit. And at the close of the day, I'm going to tell you the high point of my day was in the evening, it was gorgeous weather. The youth had just finished their worship service, and three strangers were walking on the sidewalk out just beyond the perimeter of the park. And these were all youth about the same age our kids were. And one of them was just so curious to know what we were doing, because at that point, they were doing the sharing of unconditional love, where you have two sets of kids, one who are standing with their eyes closed, and others who are going around and giving random hugs. So we had our first ever Unitarian drive-by hugging because this kid was so interested. He came over and said, "What's going on?" And we told him, and he jumped right in and got his share. It was one of the best moments that I have had at this place in my life. You should be very proud of your youth because they were the best ambassadors that you could possibly imagine. So congratulations to this congregation who cares for them. And the parents who raise them. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michelle Bryant Barbeau. I was also here, as he mentioned yesterday. The energy in this place was really cool. Like walking in the front door and being greeted by our youth who were the staff. And they're like, "Hello, can I help you?" It's like, "Oh my gosh, you are so great." So yeah, it was a wonderful time. They were amazing. But I do have two concerns on behalf of my family. My mom gave me a call just a couple of days ago. She's getting stents put in her heart to open up two blockages, and so that is happening on Monday. And then on that same phone call, I was also made aware that my dad needs to go back onto another round of chemo. His leukemia is getting out of control again. So lots of things going on with my family. If you have any spare thoughts, hopes, wishes, always appreciate them. Thanks.
Prelude begins our worship service as Tony Grippy lights our chalice.
Let your deeds be cut through. all time, starting right now.
What you do could be felt for all time.
You sure the heart of freedom, time, starting right now.
We are the hearts of freedom. We are the hearts of freedom. How we live will be felt for all time. We are the hearts of freedom. We are the hearts of freedom.
Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come and you shall know peace and joy. Let us worship together. Our first hymn is number 131, Love Will Guide Us. Please rise as you are able. Please join in responsive reading number 660 found in the back of your hymnal. It's entitled To Live Deliberately. Why should we live in such a hurry and waste of life?
We are determined to be starved before we are hungry.
I wish to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life.
I wish to learn what life has to teach, and not, when I come to die, discover that I have not lived.
I do not wish to live what is not life. Living is so dear.
Nor do I wish to practice resignation, unless it is quite necessary.
I wish to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life.
I want to cut a broad swath to drive life into a corner.
If it proves to be mean, then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it and publish its meanness to the world.
Or if it is sublime, to know it by experience and to be able to give the true account of it.
Mm-hmm. seated. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. The morning's offering will now be given and received.
We have the kids come on down this morning. Come down, sit down, and get comfy. Yeah, I'm on. Good morning, everyone. Hi, Isabella. Look at all these little people. Hello, it's the Dothakers. Welcome. Yeah. Okay, make room. That's it. Okay, how many of you go to work? Raise your hand. No? So your parents go to work, right? Yeah, well, this is a story about bigger kids who are just about ready to go to work. And the adults, after we leave, are going to be talking about the good life. And what's the good life? Well, this story might help us think about that, and help the adults might think about it, too, as they get ready for reflection. And this is how it was. In a vast and prosperous kingdom, there was a beautiful city spread out between the rolling hills to the east and a big bay that led westward to the wide, wide ocean. And in this city, there lived a family in a tiny little house on a quiet side street a mile or so from the bay. There were two parents and three children, and while they never had much money, their house was filled with love. But one day the oldest child went to his parents and said, "It's time for me to leave home. I'm old enough to go out on my own." Well, his parents were sad to see him leave, but they knew he'd grown up, and it was time for him to leave. "Go out and lead a good life," they said to him. So the oldest child went out into the world, and he found a good job that paid really well. And he made lots and lots and lots of money. And after a year and a day, he went out and bought a very expensive car. It had a very fancy Italian name. And put on his most expensive suit of clothes and strapped on his solid gold wristwatch. And then he went home to visit his parents and his younger brother and sister. So when the oldest child arrived back home, his parents welcomed him with open arms, and he pointed out to his new car, "It's a Whizzer XC7000 Deluxe," he said proudly. "That's nice, dear," they told him. Have you ever heard that tone of voice? Yeah, I have too. "That's nice. And look," he said, "I'm wearing an Italian suit made by Karma Carmone." "That's nice, dear," they told him. "And look at my watch. Look at my watch," he said, pulling down his sleeve to show them. "Solid gold. How about that?" "That's nice, dear," they told him. Well, is that all you have to say? He said, aren't you proud of me for making lots and lots and lots of money? Well, of course we're proud of you, dear, his parents told him. But having expensive things isn't really important. So not long after this, the middle child came to her parents and said, it's time for me to leave home, and I'm old enough to go out on my own. Well, his parents were sad to see her leave, but knew it was time, and they bid her goodbye. So the middle child went out in the world and got a good job. And instead of spending all her money, she saved and saved and saved and saved as much as she could. And after a year and a day, she gathered together all her stock certificates, her mutual fund reports, and everything that said how much money she was worth, and went home to visit her parents and younger brother. So when she arrived back home, her parents welcomed her with open arms. She spread out her stock certificates and her mutual fund reports and all the things that told how much money she had on the old dining room table and said, look at how much money I have. She said proudly, I live very simply and I spend almost none of this and invest everything. That's nice, dear, one of her parents said to her. And the other parent said, but why have you saved all this money? Well, the middle child stammered and started and said, I hadn't thought about that. Well, there's more to money than just having it, they said. And finally, not too long after this, the youngest child came to his parents and said, it's time for me to leave home, and I'm old enough to go out on my own. And his parents were sad to see him leave, but they knew it was time. So the youngest child went out, found a job, didn't pay very much, but it was a job where he did lots to help other people lead better lives. He lived as cheaply as possible, he put aside lots of money, and he also gave lots of his money away. He met a homeless person, and whenever he did, he gave them money too. He gave his lots of money to charity so his money would help other people, and he always gave money. And he gave lots of money to his church because he drew strength from his church, and he knew his church depended on the people in church for all the money they needed. And after a year and a day, he went home to visit his parents, and his parents welcomed him with open arms, and he told them about his job and how much his job helped people lead better lives. That's nice, dear, they told him. And I try to save as much money as possible, he said. That's nice, dear. Is that all you have to say? He said, I've got a good job that helps other people. I have enough money to put food on my table and a roof over my head, and I give away my money to my church and elsewhere to make the world a better place. Aren't you proud of me? Well, of course we're proud of you. You've done a good job, and you've saved lots of money, and you give it away to help people, said one of his parents. Yes, said the other, the money and jobs are just ways of showing how you love one another. And suddenly the youngest child understood what his parents a little better, that they would accept him no matter what and love him no matter what, that money wasn't important, that the job wasn't important. What was important was loving and accepting other people. And that's the good life. We only have two things left to do today and every other day for the rest of our lives. What is it? Have fun and learn something. Yes. All yours.
Good morning. Before we enter our time of prayer and meditation, I'd like to share with you a reading from the American poet William Stafford. Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. Others have come in their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or to hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. I will listen to what you say. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. We know the current is there, hidden. And there are comings and goings from miles away that hold the stillness exactly as before. What the river says, that is what I say. Let us take this time now to quiet our minds and relax our bodies. As I strike the singing bowl, I invite you to join me now in a time of silent meditation and prayer. Let us unite our hearts in the spirit of prayer. Most holy, known by many names and in many ways, we gather in this time and place, allowing this moment and this community to fill our minds and hearts. Like our poet, may we take this time to reflect on our lives, like one who gazes at an icy river. May we be patient during life's times of harsh coldness and seemingly unending stillness. In our silent waiting, may we find peace. In those hidden currents that lie beneath the surface, may we find strength. Whether life's flow is at times swift or slow, clear or murky, may we take courage from it and find moments of joy in it. This is our prayer this day. Amen. Please join me now in our hymn number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath.
Just as long.
Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning. Kleber's a new colleague of mine. I'm not from the St. Louis area or the bi-state area. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. I've lived there for over 30 years. I'm not originally from Atlanta, but few people are, I have discovered over the years. So I am here new in the Midwest and new to this terrain and the people and all of that. I've never spent any time in the Midwest. I hear Chicago doesn't count, so. But I enjoy serving Elliott Chapel very much. I started there in August as the Minister of Pastoral Care. It's in downtown Kirkwood. I'm sure some of you are probably familiar with that area. And it's a wonderful congregation and a wonderful community. And I live only a couple of blocks away from the church in a little apartment that's really close to the train tracks. But it's a little one-bedroom apartment. My partner of 17 years, Gail, and our two dogs, Lucy and Leo, are still in Atlanta in our house. So even though I miss them, I like my little apartment. It's, for the most part, it's quiet when the train's not going by. And it's a great place for solitude and just a little quiet refuge. And one of my favorite times in that apartment, actually, is early in the morning, around 6:30 a.m. That's usually when I start my day. And I begin with a simple breakfast, grape nuts usually, some sort of cereal like that. And of course, I read the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, like the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is getting thinner and thinner. So it's a fast read in the morning. A few months ago, however, my usually quiet ritual of cereal eating and paper reading was getting something of a jolt. I wasn't jolted by the dramatic news headlines, although there's plenty going on right now in St. Louis and in our nation with the election and around the world that's disturbing as well as exciting. But rather, as I've been opening the A section of the paper, I was encountering daily a two-page ad featuring a really large photograph of Robin Leach. Now, if you don't recall, Robin Leach was the British host of the 1980s television show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. And it was a show that gave viewers a glimpse into the exclusive and extravagant lives of wealthy people just like you and me, entertainers, business moguls, athletes, just like us. And Leach used to end his program every week with this sort of hedonistic benediction to his viewers that they have champagne wishes and caviar dreams. Well, Robin Leach was showing up each day in my morning paper, photograph of him with a champagne glass in his hand, little twinkle in his eye, smiling at me. And in bold type over his head was this headline that read, "Sell your gold and silver and get a taste of the good life." Really? Is that all I need to do is hawk my watch and get out my grandma's silver tea set and sell it to Robin and the company that he claims will change my life? Well, of course I'm not fooled, and I'm sure you're not either. But seeing that giant advertisement and Robin's toothy grin each morning got me thinking, what is the good life anyway? If it's not luxurious homes and fast cars and cruises around the world, like many of us know that it's not, then what is it? If millions of dollars and this fit physique aren't required for a blissful existence, is there some baseline of wealth and health that must be attained to be on the path to happiness? Well, as Unitarian Universalists, we're called to consider what it means to live lives mindful of others, other people, as well as other animals, of all existence. We're a faith community that affirms the inherent worth and dignity of every person, regardless of age, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, gender expression. We're a faith community that understands the importance of respecting the interdependent web of all existence. We know we're connected to every person, every plant, every animal, every element on this planet. And we also know that disrupting this interdependency, or worse, acting as if it doesn't exist, has had and will continue to have dire consequences for us all. So, when we consider what it means to have the good life, it seems that we need to first think of our individual lives in relation to all lives. I must understand that my pursuit of the good life has positive and negative consequences on your ability to pursue the good life. Perhaps Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King put it best when he argued that no person or nation can achieve health, wealth, or other things that many of us associate with the good life if others are still suffering. He wrote, "As long as there is poverty in the world, I can never be rich, even if I have $1 billion. As long as diseases are rampant and millions of people in this world cannot expect to live more than 28 or 30 years, I can never be totally healthy, even if I just got a good checkup at the Mayo Clinic. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. This is the way our world is made." King is saying something about the good life that I think some of our business and government leaders perhaps have forgotten. I think they've forgotten it when they lament the loss of American jobs, American wealth, and American global power. They seem to have forgotten that our former way of life, our so-called good life, was achieved at often a terrible cost to many others. Our good life here in the U.S. got its start on the backs of African slaves, some 4 million people at the start of the Civil War, whose labor produced cotton and tobacco for export. This good life continued to be built by hundreds of thousands of poor immigrants and children who worked in mines, mills, and factories during the American Industrial Revolution, like my grandparents did. It was paid for by our government's willingness to provide enormous tax advantages to wealthy corporations and individuals while underfunding social programs that help the poor and the disadvantaged. And this good life was and still is fiercely protected by laws and policies that favor U.S. interests without regard to the seriously negative implications they create for other people, other nations, and other beings that share our planet. Now, it's true that unemployment, runaway health care costs, and mounting government debt are real concerns for our country. However, whatever we do in an effort to create the American good life must be guided by our collective moral conscience, which says that we can no longer focus on achieving our good life while ignoring the basic rights and needs of others. If we're to engage in a way of life that is good not just for ourselves, but for our neighbors near and far, we must begin by thinking about sustainability. A good life that has sustainability at its core means that it's a life built on decisions and actions that contribute to the wholeness and wellness of everyone and everything involved. No one's gain is at another's loss. Everyone wins or no one does. For this reason, says Episcopal theologian Matthew Fox, sustainability is another word for justice. For what is sustainable is just, and what is unjust is not. What does our liberal faith have to say about such an approach to the good life? While a goal of sustainability and justice clearly fits with many of our stated unifying principles, what approach might we take to create a good life that's also a conscientious life? For answers, we might consider the development and application of four life skills or core behaviors as outlined by Unitarian Universalist minister Michael Schuller in his book, Making the Good Life Last. Schuller argues that somewhere between the concept of sustainability and the myriad of concrete applications, persons must adopt a set of behavioral keys, which, when properly understood, lay the groundwork for adaptive action. Now, Schuller believes that these four core behaviors are paying attention, staying put, exercising patience, and practicing prudence. Schuller argues that when we're able to put these four keys into practice on a regular basis, our choices will be wiser, healthier, and more considerate. We'll find ourselves guided more and more by decisions that heal our spirit and the wider world. And in this way, we'll also come to know the communal nature of the good life. We'll see the good life as one that energizes our minds, bodies, and spirits, and energetically builds the beloved community that we all dream about. So the first key, paying attention, Schuller says is about deeply noticing things, our lives, our surroundings, the communities in which we live, the infrastructures upon which we depend, the way things truly are. Paying attention. The second key, staying put, is about controlling our restlessness and belonging to what's already present in our lives. It's not about staying stuck in something destructive, says Schuller, but rather about accepting the responsibility of connection and growth that comes with making a commitment to our existing circumstances and our current relationships. Staying put. The third key, exercising patience, is about delaying our gratification and slowing down our pace. It enables us to reflect in a meaningful way on our actions and to develop a deeper appreciation for the world around us. Exercising patience. And the final key, practicing prudence, involves acting with due caution and foresight. Schuller says it means living mindfully, exercising care, and just applying common sense. Practicing prudence. Now, these four keys Reverend Michael Schuller presents may not seem terribly new. However, what I find intriguing about them is that they are, in fact, spiritual practices, simple spiritual practices that sharpen our awareness of ourselves by inviting us to engage more profoundly in the details of our lives and the wider world. So where can we find models for living a life built on these simple spiritual practices? What can we do to develop them in ourselves? And how can these spiritual practices help us create a good life that's both personally satisfying and sustains others? Well, in my own experience, I've been drawn on several occasions to the sustaining life, the good life that I have found in contemplative communities. Now, over the years, I have stayed at monasteries and convents, and I've looked forward to the simplicity that they bring into my life and the opportunity I have to reflect. I like their simple furnishings. I like their simple meals. I've always noticed that in most of these communities, there's a commitment to conserving natural resources. And I also like that they tend to focus their day and center their daily lives on activities that renew the mind, the body, and the spirit. Now, my first encounter with a contemplative community was a visit that I made years ago to an Episcopal monastery in Santa Barbara, California. And it was following a painful divorce. And I was, as you might imagine, looking for healing, looking for some answers. Now, members of this community in Santa Barbara live in a retreat house that's located in the hills high above the Pacific Ocean. They're in a beautiful setting. There's a walled garden there, and there's hiking trails in every direction. I felt like I had picked the perfect spot. And the brothers there lead balanced lives of communal prayer, silence, shared household chores, and they also do service out in the wider community. They regularly host workshops and programs on topics critical to one's spiritual journey and transformation. So it's not an insular community. They're very much engaged in the wider community. And in many ways, these brothers seem to practice Schuller's four keys of paying attention, staying put, exercising patience, and practicing prudence. Many of them have been at the Santa Barbara community for decades, and they're committed to the intimacy and the challenges of community life. Now, when I visited them years ago, I experienced not a dull or isolated environment, but a place of thoughtful and engaged persons, persons who cared for themselves and the world around them. They eagerly and graciously invited me into their community. They talked to me about their spiritual journey and shared details of their own. And they also shared with me stories and what it was like to live in community, the challenges of that as well as the joy of that. They were also very kind, and they forgave my mistakes. Like, for example, when I scaled the garden wall after accidentally locking myself out of the retreat house. Or another time when I forgot that there's a morning code of silence and I sat down at the breakfast table and just chatted away while the brothers were sitting around the table just sort of smiling and nodding at me. But after a week's stay, I can tell you I felt rested, calm, and more aware of myself and others. I was healed by their hospitality, and I was humbled by their service. Thinking back on that time in Santa Barbara, I believe that the brothers got it right. And Robin Leach, well, he's got it all wrong. They, of course, know that the good life's not about champagne wishes and caviar dreams. They've discovered that the good life is both an individual and a communal endeavor. It's an endeavor that has the ability to nourish one's soul and feed the hungry spirit of the wider world. The brothers taught me that simple spiritual practices combined with the accountability of community lead to greater peace and greater awareness. These disciplines open the way to a simpler existence that's both life-affirming and life-giving. As we leave this place today, I invite you to ask yourselves, how do I intend to create a good life that sustains me and is sustainable? A life that's kind to myself and just to others. What spiritual practices will I cultivate to help me along the way? Will they include things like paying attention, staying put, exercising patience, or practicing prudence? Or are there other spiritual practices that I'll make more time for in my life? Whatever your spiritual practices may be, may you find them leading you towards a deeper awareness of yourself and each other. And may we find them helping create the good life, a great life, for ourselves and for all. Amen. Please join me now in our closing hymn, number 128, "For All That Is Our Life." Please rise as you are willing and able.
See you.
standing for our closing words. Our benediction today are words that are attributed to the Buddha. Go forth in every direction for the happiness, the harmony, the welfare of many. Offer your heart the seeds of your own understanding, like a lamp overturned and relit again, illuminating the darkness. Our service is ended. May you go in peace.